It's the Dearly Departed Podcast, featuring your host, historian Scott Michaels, and filmmaker Mike Dorsey.
And welcome to another episode of Dearly Departed Podcast. This is Mike Dorsey.
And Scott Michaels.
And this is episode 3, and we're going to be talking about the Addams Family. Do it again.
No, we don't.
I wasn't ready. My snapping fingers are ready. Okay. We'll jump ahead, though.
Nobody ever does that.
So before we do that, though, so we have a segment that we will occasionally do called Hate Mail.
Hate Mail.
Luckily, our podcast hasn't got any hate mail yet, but Scott gets hate mail. And Scott, what happened?
The last weekend we did this. It was Sharon Tate's birthday this week, the 24th of January. She would be 76 years old. So we had an event at the shop, a happy birthday party. And it was a fundraiser. We raised money for the Justice for Homicide Victims charity. So, but what we unveiled were some of Sharon's personal items, including her makeup, her eyelashes, and her brassiere. So,
and how what was this? Was an auction that had been done?
Yeah.
By
Deborah Tate, Sharon's sister. Okay. So the sister was fine with unloading the.
It wasn't like an
people.
Illicit auction that you guys grabbed. This
yeah.
at, right. It was official.
Right.
As official as it could be.
I mean, she was selling curlers, you know, which I bought, and just the weird stuff, because I like that normal everyday kind of thing that people have, and it makes people relate to other people. So we Elisa Jordan, LA Woman Tours, and I we worked on this for weeks, and Elisa spent a ton of money on decorations. You saw, I mean, it was
right.
streamers and balloons and mm-hmm. cupcakes and you
and
name
we
it.
We have a video of this on our Facebook page. If you
yeah.
look up Dearly Departed Podcast, there's a video of the night.
Yeah, Elisa is so sweet too, and she had the foresight to realize. She said, "We're not going to have a birthday cake because I don't want to have a knife laying around." And I was like, "Okay,
yeah.
All right, that's cool. That makes complete sense." So anyway, after that, Elisa posted some pictures, and these assholes just come right out and say, "That's a disgrace! How dare you?" And there was one woman that said, "How do you think you'd like to be remembered by your underwear?" And I'm thinking, first of all, her sister sold the thing,
right.
and second of all, how dare you? Eat me. I really pissed me off because I don't know. It's funny how you can work and you can work, and then I don't even know why it gets to me. But sometimes there's that one person who just doesn't give a shit all the work you did on it, or the fact that it's a fundraiser. And they're like, "That's disgraceful." Send. It's like taking a big dump on top of what you did. It just pissed me off. But for some reason, usually I can let that stuff go. But for some reason, it really just bugged my ass and continues to. And of course, I was up late, and I was sober. I was up late, just sending nasty messages back. We had a great time, but you are an asshole.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Hilarious. So tonight, we are not at El Coyote. We are at another location in Hollywood, and we're actually getting a windstorm.
It's a blustery
right now.
Day, my God.
It is windy.
Your place, Mike, we're in Mike's place now, and Mike has a spectacular view. This panoramic view over to the Hollywood sign, and now it's really absolutely incredible view. And it's a really windy day, and you're kind of high up, and this wind is whipping this place around.
Yeah.
Your whole hallway sounds like,
Sounds like a wind tunnel.
It does, yeah.
So you'll hear wind in the background and the occasional car alarm
and
probably
alarm, yeah.
somebody, an ambulance or a fire truck going down the street. Anyways, let's move on to news of the week.
News of the week.
What?
Do you have anything?
I have something. Well, we got Sharon Tate's bra.
That is pretty special one. I wanted to bring out Carol Channing passed away since our last
God.
Show.
Yeah. She was, I just loved her. She was such a bizarre character, and there's nobody like that ever again. I mean, she broke her own mold, She was outrageous. She looked interesting. She talked interestingly. She had the goods, she was a personality that, she could perform, she could act and somewhat sing. I mean, she was more of a caricature isn't quite the word I want to use, because that implies that she's supposed to look like somebody else, I think. Right. But no, she was a true original, and I got to meet her a couple of times just at book signings. It was never any kind of in depth thing. But she opened Hello Dolly for the first time in Detroit, which is where I'm from, and she was good friends with a gossip columnist in Detroit who I knew, and we talked a lot about her. And you know, she was into health food, like, in the 50s. Mm. Whenever you'd invite her over, she had jars of food in her purse that she would pull out. She had jars of potatoes and things, and she brought her own food. She would not touch restaurant food. And fine dining restaurants would just put a plate in front of her. It's like, oh, it's Carol Channing. She's going to do what she does. So, right. But yeah, she was a real curiosity. I liked her so much, and there's no one like her.
No, and then we also lost Bob Einstein's probably the next biggest name. I think we lost recently Super Dave, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who passed away. And then I think the other big news is it probably will not go through, but Bobby Beausoleil has been recommended for parole.
Yeah.
And Beausoleil being, you know, one of the Manson family murderers who killed Gary Hinman, the music teacher, up in Topanga Canyon. So he was recommended for parole a week or two ago.
Yeah, this one's got me really curious, you know.
Well, it'll go to Gavin Newsom, the new governor of California, and it always is up, which I think is frankly bullshit, that it's like a political decision, basically.
Oh,
someone,
sure.
That's nonsense to me. I think it should be up to the parole board. If they say you can go, you can go. Because what governor or any other politician wants to be the guy who let one of the Manson family get loose? Nobody wants that. So it really comes down to, it's not about justice or whether he deserves it or doesn't deserve it. Wherever you land on that, I don't think it should be a politicized thing.
And, you know, in his case, though, in Beausoleil's case, I mean, he was sentenced to die. You know,
right.
He was supposed to be executed.
Sure.
And it was just a fluke that the death penalty was overturned and there was no such thing as life without parole. Which brings us to Leslie. You know, a lot of people don't realize Leslie Van Houten, who, you know, I'll talk to myself, there's going to be people that are really pissed by me saying this, but she didn't kill anybody. She stabbed a dead woman 16 times. I'm not saying that makes it any better.
Right.
I'm just saying she didn't cause anyone's death. Whether she intended to or not, it doesn't matter. She didn't kill anybody.
Yeah.
Now, she got another trial. You know, she was out for 6 months, and she worked as a secretary because her original attorney, Ronald Hughes, died during the trial, so she was given another opportunity. In that second trial, or third, I think it was, she was sentenced to life in prison, not death. She was sentenced to life in prison with the chance of parole in 7 years, which would have made her eligible in the mid-80s.
Right.
So I mean, she's made some poor decisions, but whatever. She did that when she was young, and she did that in prison. She married some lunatic, and they found a nurse's outfit or something that she, you know, like she was going to be escaping or something.
Right.
Like that. But I don't know. It's just Leslie was approved. Her sentence was, you know, said she could get out in 7 years or be eligible to, and the parole board finally said yes. So it'll be nixed. She won't get out. But but in her case, I'm not saying I want her out, but I am saying that politically, you know, that's why she's in.
Yep, exactly.
And it's just a weird thing. I'm a big supporter of the Justice for Homicide Victims charity.
And Deborah Tate always, she came out again and was, you know, vocally against Beausoleil getting out.
Yeah.
Beausoleil had nothing to do with the murder of her
sister. No, but
Deborah
Tate is given opportunity by the family members. She represents the LaBianca family
maybe Hinman's family, for all we know, too, I guess.
Probably.
Or something. Yeah, yeah.
I
sure.
mean, that's become her sort of, it's like an albatross to her. But, you know,
right.
God love her. I mean, it was her family. She was destroyed. Her family was destroyed by these things, not just her sister.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, more power to her. People dog on her. I don't really understand that. You know, online, people are just monsters. Just nasty to her, and I don't get that because you know, they say, oh, she's raking it in. She's always saying that she's using her sister's memory to rake in all this money, and I just think, well, at least she's doing it, you know.
How do you not have a right to do that as a member of their family?
Yeah, and they think that you get paid for talk show appearances and you get paid to go to parole hearings. It just isn't that
way.
And if you do get paid, it's like $400 on a talk show, you know, that's scale, I think.
Yeah.
But if you get paid.
Yeah, people think whenever it comes to anything Hollywood related, there's just everybody's raking in all this money, and it's not the case.
And everyone thinks their life is worthy of a book. You know, and I've met so many people, it's like Norma Desmond. You know, like, oh, you should write my book.
That reminds me, we should talk about this, because, okay, so people listening, probably a lot of you know, but some of you may not know, Scott and I made the 6 Degrees of Helter Skelter documentary almost over a decade now since we made it, about a decade since it came out. So while we were making this documentary, Altobelli, who owned the Tate Murder House, which, you know, a lot of people don't realize Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski were renting that house up on Cielo Drive from this guy named Altobelli. And Altobelli was an agent. And so Altobelli was still alive when we made that movie, and we reached out to him about doing an interview. And speaking of people wanting to get paid...
Right.
I think, Scott, you talked to him first, and you got just a bad vibe from him and said you wouldn't talk to him again.
You know, so I wrote him a letter, and I said, we're doing this documentary, and I'll pay you a few $100 to, you know, to sit down with us and, 10 minutes on camera. And he never, well, he did respond, but it was months later, and I got the phone calling. This is Rudy Altobelli.
Such a weird voice.
Said, oh, thanks for returning my call, Mr. Altobelli. And, I was wondering if we could sit down and interview you. And he says, I don't want your money. What the hell do I want your money for? I don't need your money. I was like, okay. He responded to my message by calling me. And
to tell you he didn't want
your money. No, he was really weird. I said, did you know Manson? Because he did. I mean, he knew Manson.
That's interesting.
Because that day that Manson visited Sharon Tate at the house in March, 5 months before the murders, after her photographer said, get out of here,
check the back, maybe the guest house.
Well,
maybe
yeah, because Altobelli was in the guest house. So, and then Altobelli opened up the door and said, what do you want, Charlie? And Charlie said, where's Terry Melcher? And Altobelli knew where Terry Melcher was, but wouldn't tell Manson. Mm. So I said, you knew Charles Manson? I didn't know Charles Manson. I said, well, that afternoon he came to you and you knew him by name. Well, I knew him, but I didn't know him.
He was just a dick.
So anyway, it was an interesting conversation.
I called him right after you did, I remember, because you're like, I am not talking to him again. It's like, you can try. So I called him, and again, he wanted to know what was in it for him, and I was like, I'll give you like $500. Like, I'd never offer people money for an interview, but for that, to get that guy in our film, I was like, you know what, it's worth it. Because nobody's ever really heard from him before. And he just goes, $500? What am I supposed to do with that? So just to wrap up the whole Bobby Bosley thing, I've come across so many weird things with the whole Manson thing since we made that movie, but I came across this really cool recording. You know, Bobby Bosley was a musician. He knew Arthur Lee and was a part of Lee's band for a while. And Bosley continued to this day as a musician in prison. And he's been in some prison bands. And I came across this crazy recording of Bosley and Clem Grogan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they apparently were in prison together at one point. You know, Grogan now is out.
Yeah.
But at one point, apparently, they were in prison together, and Grogan was in Bosley's prison band. And there's this crazy recording of them, and you actually hear Bosley introduce Grogan, like on bass or whatever the heck instrument he was playing. It's really wild. So if I can find it, I'll post a link on our blog over at Podbean, where these things are posted. We put lots of links to things. So... with that is, I think, news of the week. Did we cover it?
I think so.
All right, so let's get into the...
It's time for the main feature.
Okay, so, the Addams Family. Why?
There is your Munsters and there is your Addams Family. When I was a kid, I loved it. I just thought it was a lot of fun. Now, we chose this week because it's the death anniversary or death anniversary of Ted Cassidy, who played Lurch, and also Blossom Rock, who played played Grandmama, and they both died in January. Ted died in 79, and she died in 78. So I was just a big fan of the show. I really liked it. It was creepy. It was kooky, and it was clever.
Yes, it really was.
It's sort of interesting because the Munsters and the Addams Family were always sort of head to head. You know, they both started in '65, I think. They both ended 2 years later, and the main difference, I think, is that the Munsters were just a regular family. They just happened to look weird.
Yeah, and also the Addams Family had this this body of work before. I mean, they'd been a comic.
Yeah.
You know, a panel comic since the 30s.
Yeah.
So they'd already been around, like, you know, 20, 30 years by the time the show came. So they kind of already had the following, I guess. And, you know, for that, probably for that reason, it's had legs. There's been the movies that have been made with the new cast, you know, back in the 90s. And there's been cartoons. And, you know, it seems like one of those things that never completely went away.
Yeah.
Even though the show, you know, the sitcom only lasts a couple years.
Yeah. And it's a real shame because the Munsters, you know, they tried to... Well, everyone's tried to reboot it. I don't think they've never done a Munsters feature-length film.
No, I don't think so.
But it would be difficult to duplicate that because of the chemistry of all the... I think the Addams Family is easier to duplicate.
It is.
And the Munsters were so character-driven
mm-hmm.
that it would be impossible, I think, to get another Fred Gwynn. You know, they tried it. Oh, my God, those remakes. Oh, my God. Anyway, no, they're
well,
so
and,
bad.
And Christina Ricci was great as
yeah.
the little girl and all that in the movies. And, I mean, that whole cast, I think, for the movie that they did was really great.
Yeah, yeah, they did. They had a great supporting cast, too. Mm-hmm. Joan Cusack, and they were great. And Christopher Lloyd was a bizarre fester. He was very good. It was Christopher Lloyd,
yeah,
right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, he's good. He was good. But the original, I'm very fond of, because it was, I used to love watching that when I was a kid, 65. So I was 3 when it came out. But I remember probably 68, 69, 70 watching mm-hmm. it.
And it was in reruns when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Later in the 80s, it was on during the day all the time, it seems like, along with the Munsters.
So. Yeah, and Munsters had a kick-ass theme song. I mean, there was that surf garage stuff. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And the Addams Family was cute. Vic Mizzi was the guy who did that music for the Addams Family.
Well, that was that great era, which we don't do it anymore, where they explain the show in the theme song,
yeah.
right? Like Gilligan's Island.
Gilligan's
Island.
Another
great example of that, right? Where they tell you what it is so you always know, so you don't have to spend time setting it up. Right,
yeah.
The Brady Bunch is a good one, too. I mean, there was kind of that era in the 60s and 70s when they did that, and that's just kind of gone away now.
Yeah.
A lot of shows don't even really have intros anymore.
He did Green Acres. He did the theme from that. And but yeah, no, they don't. They
Beverly
don't really.
Hillbillies was
but who
another
gives
one?
A shit about the shows on television anymore? Yeah. You know, there's not really
there's
nothing
like that.
There's nothing like that. No, there's charm to them. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You went to a fantasy land when you're watching the Beverly Hillbillies or Green Acres. You know what I mean? They were isolated. They were Hooterville.
Right.
You know, nobody cares where Modern Family lives. You know, it's not part of the joke.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, let's get into more of the Addams Family stuff here. So why don't we just start with Ted Cassidy, Lurch.
Ted. Did you ever see him? He was 6'8".
Mm-hmm.
And he... It was interesting because he wouldn't do the Addams Family. No, he said when he took the part because he didn't want to do freak shows. He didn't want not literally freak shows, but he didn't want to play freaky parts.
He was just his height made him ripe for those types of parts, and he didn't want to fall into that trap.
Yeah,
I guess.
Except
yeah.
in the press for the Addams Family, he's like, "Oh, I love this. This is so different." You know,
it's a paycheck.
Yeah, right. And yeah, they I think they were paid well, but that was it. Like anyone mm-hmm. back then, they got paid for like 2 repeats or something
wow.
like that.
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
was a lifeguard. You ever see that picture?
I didn't realize that's, you know, people are not getting ongoing pay for all these repeats because I saw somewhere recently on Twitter, you know, William Shatner from Star Trek is very active on Twitter and interacts with fans. And somebody mentioned something to him that, oh, you're still getting those Star Trek, you know, series checks. And he's like, we stopped getting those a long time ago.
Yeah.
Like, we don't get paid for those reruns anymore.
Yeah. I think the cast from Gilligan's Island, it was 4 repeats is all they got.
Unbelievable.
And it's been on the air over 50 years.
Right.
So yeah. And they, like, Jethro, Max Baer, he only got paid, I think it was $2,000 an episode. But, you know, a couple of repeats, that was it.
Well, you know, people didn't anticipate. Remember, that's what Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz are, you know, Desi Lu Studios, that's what they're kind
Who
of famous
Star Trek.
For.
Yeah.
Well, and they're famous for recognizing
yeah.
that, hey, there's going to be a time in the future when there's going to be a lot of channels, and they're going to need to fill it up with reruns.
Yeah.
And so we want to own all our shows. Like, okay. Because at that time, it was like, oh, it aired once, and then maybe it gets another repeat later in the week.
Yeah.
And that's the whole run. Nobody ever sees that episode again, right? So I guess they just didn't anticipate it when all these actors did their contracts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, who figures? But yeah, right. Lucy, a lot of people don't know Lucy's responsible for Star Trek. I mean, Lucille Ball mm-hmm. produced it.
Right.
And Mission Impossible
mm-hmm.
was another Desi Lu production. So you have Lucy to thank for that. That's going to be a good show we should do because there are so many
Star Trek.
Curious people and instances mm-hmm. regarding the we can get Clint Howard on. That would be so cool.
That would be incredible.
Remember him? He played that little kid. He was like the ruler of his kingdom. And yeah, Clint Howard was a good actor, and that would be, you know, he didn't get the cuteness that Ronnie Howard got. And yeah. But
well,
anyway,
he heard it here first. But there will be a Star Trek episode of Dearly Departed podcast.
I think there should be.
No, it's done. Okay, Ted Cassidy. So he died in 1979 from complications following surgery. I think it was heart surgery.
Yeah, he did. He did die of cardiac arrest.
And he was only 46.
That's crazy, isn't it? He was also he was the voice of the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, in the Bill Bixby 70s show.
Mm-hmm.
The Lou Ferrigno, I guess, was taken. I remember he did Bigfoot. Were you old enough to remember the Bionic People?
No.
$6 Million Man.
Mm, I know of it.
There was like a two-parter. That was like a big deal, the $6 Million Man and Bigfoot.
Wow.
And it was pretty good. And you know that, you know, Universal Studios, now it's King Kong, where you're in the mm-hmm. and the little, what do you call them? The little bugs come up all over you. Well, that whole spinning thing was from $6 Million Man,
right.
Bigfoot episode.
With the ice tunnel or whatever.
Yeah.
Around you, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That was and that thing was a puke maker, wasn't it? And you're in there, oh my god, that ride was something. Anyway,
okay,
but you know about his burial, right?
No, I'd love to hear about it.
Okay, well, he was cremated, and they had a funeral for him at Forest Lawn, and he was buried, according to what I understand, a couple of published sources, he was buried in his backyard under a tree. His wife buried him under a tree. And since that time, his wife moved away, who's dead now, and they left his ashes there. So his urn is supposed to be under this tree at his old house. And then there's other stories that his son told a story about how they were redoing the house and a gardener was in back, and they saw the gardener call the other gardener and he had something in his hands, and they ran, they sort of ran away with this. Their lurch is gone. Ted Cassidy's ashes are forever gone.
What? Some people stole, maybe found the urn and ran off of them?
Yeah, and the house has changed hands, mm-hmm. and it's still there, though, at least as far as I know, the house is still there.
Wow.
But Lurch's ashes are missing, which is, I think, fascinating. And you know he was Thing, right?
Yeah, he was also, in any scene that he was not in Thing, the same scene as Thing with, he was the Thing hand, right?
Yeah.
And then when Thing got a girlfriend, that was Carolyn.
Oh, really? Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah, my God. Carolyn Jones was the female Thing.
I love that they had boxes, like the real pretty box. That was cool.
So, speaking of Carolyn Jones,
Morticia. Oh, you know, Morticia's based on Charles Adams' wife, his first wife. That was a real inspiration for the
really?
Morticia character, as I understand it. Yeah.
The first goth girl.
Yeah, and she was, too. I love that octopus dress. She could never walk. You know, she'd just shuffle with this dress. But she, I mean, there was some clever writing there. And the way she cut the roses, cut the flowers off the roses. So mm-hmm. I love that. I mean, it was so out there. And she, you know, she was The House of Wax with Vincent Price. And she was in King Creole with Elvis, The Man Who Knew Too Much. And she was the original Mrs. Aaron Spelling. You know, they were Mrs. Aaron Spelling. They were married for 13 years.
Right.
Carolyn Jones. And
she had an amazing acting career. Her heyday was the 50s and 60s, but she continued on acting through the 70s and 80s, just, you know, parts that she could get. It seems like it kind of faded after the Addams Family. I almost wonder if maybe that typecasted some of those actors, or maybe it's just they started to age out, or I don't know what reason was.
She had a little bit of a, well, there's a biography I read. His name is James Plinth, I think his name, and he wrote a book called In Morticia's Shadow. I helped him a little bit with the death research on that. But his portrait of her is sort of, she's a bit dotty. Mm. You know, she was a live wire. I don't think she was the most stable of individuals. And a lot of the time, Aaron Spelling was giving her work. You know, he was married to Candy
sure.
Spelling, who was his widow and Tori's mother, mm-hmm. et cetera. But Carolyn Jones was not working. She couldn't pay her bills. And he was having these secret meetings. Nothing untoward.
Because they were divorced by this point.
Oh, yeah,
and
long
Aaron
divorce.
Spelling is remarried, but he's still helping her out.
And unbeknownst to Candy, I guess mm-hmm. he would do it behind her back. So they had these meetings, and he would cast her, give her bit parts in some of his shows.
Here's
and then,
a paycheck. Here's a paycheck. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she died. She had a colon cancer. cancer, and I think she had fought it, and I think maybe had been maybe in remission at one point, and she wouldn't tell people that she was sick. She kind of had excuses for what she was having problems with, and didn't just wanted to keep working.
Yeah,
and
she
just
was
worked through it.
She was in a soap that Spelling did called Capital, I think, right?
Something like that, yeah.
And they say that she would work all day, and then she'd go to treatment at nighttime.
Wow.
And nobody on the show even knew that she was sick. I said, that's just bizarre. I mean, what a trooper.
Really, seriously.
And then she, well, actually, because of that, her illness, that's why she dropped out of the show after the first season. But yeah, so she was really close with her mother. She was cremated. They had a funeral for her at her home in West Hollywood with her husband, mm-hmm. her last husband. And then they buried her at Melrose Abbey Cemetery, and she's supposedly resting on her mother's casket. Cremated, of course. Right. And she's not just laying there.
Draped.
And with an octopus, a little octopus thing. But no, she's buried with her mother at Melrose Abbey Cemetery.
So she died in 1983, and she was, I think, only 53.
She was really young.
So same, just like with Ted Cassidy, was only 46.
Yeah.
There's kind of a theme going
and
here.
She gave her wig to the Academy. So supposedly...
The Morticia wig?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it wouldn't be the...
Not the Film Academy, but the Television Academy. Is
yeah, so it's probably locked up, like the Smithsonian. They have so much cool shit that no one will ever see.
Yeah.
That pisses me off.
So, speaking of getting pissed off, I don't know why that would be a segue for this, but Ken Weatherwax.
Pugsley.
Pugsley. So he was the little boy. And you, Dearly Departed, has a personal connection to this story.
Oh, we have him.
Exactly.
That's right. We have some of him in our shop. Yeah, Weatherwax, his mother... His mother's sister was Ruby Keeler, the dancer, who was married to Al Jolson, which would make Al Jolson his uncle, I suppose. Hmm. And his
wait, say that again.
His aunt, Ken Weatherwax's mother's sister, his aunt.
I got you.
Was Ruby Keeler, the dancer,
mm-hmm.
and she was married to Al Jolson.
So yeah, uncle.
So that would make Al Jolson his uncle.
Yeah.
And his brother was another actor who was another child actor. His name was Joey, I think his name was. And he played a character called Porky on a show called Lassie. And he did that for about 4 years.
Porky and Pugsley.
Yeah.
The two brothers. Wow.
And then I think it was his uncle or it was Rudd Weatherwax or was it his father, Rudd Weatherwax, who's trained Lassie. You know,
that's right. There was this whole Lassie, crazy Lassie connection with like multiple families. That's right. I read about that.
So he did his Addams Family stint. Apparently, wasn't thrilled with the reputation he had afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, kids in school, who's going to like the little pudgy kid called Pugsley? That would be merciless.
Right. Not the coolest role to have played.
Merciless, and also no residuals again. So he probably got paid $1,000 a week to be Pugsley.
And the money was all gone, I'm sure, by the time he became an adult. Yeah.
Yeah. So he worked for a while behind the scenes at Paramount. This is when you're talking over to his 20s now, or even probably 30s. He worked as a set builder.
Right.
And then eventually he passed away. I guess he had some struggles with booze and drugs. And I do know that he was he was born again, extremely Christian. Can you say it? Extremely Christian?
Extremely Christian, yeah. Not just sort of Christian.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably like talking in tongues stuff.
Super Christian, yeah.
Yeah.
Fall over on the stage.
Right.
Type of, yeah. Gotcha.
And so when he died, I knew that he was not of means. So I reached out to a friend of mine, Steve Cox. Steve Cox is a buddy of mine. Steve, I've known for about 30 years now. He wrote the Addams Family Chronicles. He wrote the Munsters book. He wrote the Green Acres book. He wrote the Don Knotts book. I mean, he's written some amazing books. And so he told... it's interesting. Pugsley, Ken Weatherwax, was at the coroner's office, and his brother would not claim him.
Because it was going to cost money to bury him, or is that basically...
And didn't like him.
Oh, wow.
I guess he was a really complicated individual. So Ken Weatherwax's nephew, Bo, is... I was introduced via Steve Cox, And I told Bo, I said, well, if you're interested, we'd take care of the arrangements for you know, Ken. We would raise the money to have him. And I think they were a little bit shell-shocked because there was a lot of attention at that point that Ken, when Ken died. So he was sort of hesitant to, you know.
Who are these people? Yes. All these people are contacting us.
What do you
us?
Want? What
right.
do you want? Hmm. So, and Bo is also very seriously into the church. And Bo's a great guy. I don't mean anything negative by this. But a couple of years after he died, I reached out one more time to Bo. And he said, you know, I was just thinking about it. Maybe it is the right time to do this. So we, you know, held a fundraiser and we raised the money and we had him inurned at Valhalla Cemetery.
Wait, he had already been cremated by this
no,
point.
No, he was just laying around for 2 years.
I didn't know.
No, he was cremated, yeah. Okay. He was on his nephew's shelf.
I was just doing the math. I got it. Because they just give it to you in a plastic bag in a box, basically.
A nice
you have
box,
something
yeah.
else.
Well, yeah, it's a nice little, it was a nice seal.
Oh, was it a nice box?
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. So yeah, on Halloween of 2017, we had a memorial service for him. And about 20 people showed up. Valhalla Cemetery, very nice people at Pierce Brothers. Good, made us a good deal on a grave for him, right around the corner from Rod Weatherwax, his dad, I think. And,
his
and that's where he is. And his nephew gave us a portion of his ashes. So he is actually in Dearly Departed Tours.
I saw it in your shop there the other night when we were doing the Sharon Tate bra. Birthday party.
Yeah,
I took a picture. So that photo that I took of their display of Ken Weatherwax's cremains.
Yeah,
like cremains, you put them in a little miniature coffin. So those are that photo will be on our blog as well. So you can go and see what we're talking about.
Yeah, his family. So it was Bo came in for the anniversary or for the service, and. You know, they're not really worldly people.
Mm.
And again, I don't mean that in an insulting way. Sure. I wish I, you know, lived in my own little square area and never moved. But yeah, when I introduced him to Troy, who is my husband, you know, it was like, Troy calls it the fembot look. It was like, blah, 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 blah. You know, it was like, he could
wait,
not
but
compute.
Yeah,
he could not compute it. You're his husband. What? Yeah, but it's so sweet. And he still texts me on holidays saying, hey, how you doing, Scott? And it's like really, really nice.
That's good.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Okay, so that brings us to the last of the Addams Family folk. Are we going to talk about Grandma, too? Do you want to talk
well,
about
we
grandma?
Can. I mean, I think so. I think
let's
I think
talk about grandma, and then we'll talk about Jackie.
Yeah, and there's a few of them here that we haven't really talked about yet. There was the I wanted to talk about weird family members like Carolyn Jones. You know, she played her sister Ophelia. You ever see that where she played the sitar and she would do these really awful noises, which she'd ding, and she'd do these horrible. I'm not even going to do it because it's probably racist.
But, yeah.
And her mother was Margaret Hamilton, the Wicked Witch of the West, and there were so many cool characters that showed
guest
up.
Guest appearances, yeah.
And the set. I mean, you know, Rob Zombie has the polar bear.
He does.
Yeah. Isn't that the coolest? And the Real House was. On Adams Street here in
was
in
it really?
Los yeah,
that it was. What was one of the Adams Street the mansions? That
yeah,
were so famous down there that and, all kind of looked like that. Yeah,
right.
That's wild. I didn't realize it was though. It was an Adams District house.
They had when they used it for the pilot, it was sort of a normal looking house, and then they decorated it because it's obviously an illustration for the TV show.
Wow.
But so Blossom Rock, which was her real name, actually. And she was born in the 1800s. I forget what year it was. But her sister, she was the older sister of Jeanette MacDonald, who is famous for, you know, being in the Nelson Eddy Jeanette MacDonald movies where he would play the Mountie and she would play the pretty girl and they would sing these really operatic singing together. And they were a real famous duo back then. And she and Blossom was her sister. So she was a really actually not an unattractive person, but they really uglied her up for the for the role of Grandmama.
Right.
And she's buried at Forest Lawn, which is Forest Lawn Glendale, which is where Jeanette MacDonald is buried. And here's a piece of trivia for you. Forest Lawn are famously close-lipped about who the famous people that are lived.
Because so many famous people are buried in Forest Lawn.
I mean, yeah. Gable, Lombard, you know, Michael Jackson, and Bogart, and there's so many people that are buried there, but and they don't tell you because they'll say it's privacy or the family's issues. Well, Jeanette McDonald made sure that if anyone wants to see her, they've got to tell them. So if you go to the front gate and you say, I want to see where Jeanette McDonald is, they have to tell you where she's buried.
Oh, how interesting.
And she's buried in the same hallway as George Burns and Gracie Allen and Nat King Cole and a few other people. Clara Bow. And so it's kind of interesting, but
it's interesting how, because Hollywood Forever Cemetery seems much more open.
Oh my God! Yeah,
obviously they've kind of they've leaned into the celebrity connection and all the people that are buried there, which is another mile long list. What's interesting at Hollywood Forever is you can take pictures of the famous graves. You weren't supposed to take pictures of just all the non famous people that are buried there.
You know,
if you see a cool headstone that's like just a regular civilian person who is not famous, and you go, oh, I'm going to take a picture of that, if a security guy sees you, they'll tell you.
It's like, how the fuck do you know who's famous, who isn't?
I was stopped one time while doing it, though. They were like, no, I guess they know where the famous one grave markers
they can't
are.
Possibly.
You would think, right?
I mean, but there are famous composers, and like, they're going to know where Wolfgang so-and-so is buried, or Adolphe Manjou. You know, no Adolphe Manjou. I mean, come on. Oh, it really pisses me off. But if you want to spend $10, you can go see Night of the Living Dead there on Friday or on Saturday night.
But
you
don't
know?
You dare take a photo of them.
No, I mean they sell beer in there, for God's sake. And
for the record, I love Hollywood Forever.
Yeah, I do too. I bought my own grave there.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And then when
you
then
and
when
Troy both?
Pardon?
You and Troy both?
No, this is before I met Troy.
Oh, okay.
And it's
is
right.
He's going to be right in an urn on top of you.
No, he's gonna be with his octopus dress.
Yes.
No, he's gonna be I bought it like back in 2000 or back in I don't remember what year. My buddy Larry died. I think it was 2002, and I bought my place there. And it's right around the corner from Valentino. Now I bought it for $5,000, and I found out that now that grave is 16.5 is what it's worth.
Whoa,
now.
$16,500.
Yes. Now, no, get this. I worked at Hollywood Forever for about 10 minutes when I moved back from England, and I was supposed to be selling stuff, and it's like they want you to go door to door and sell graves. Like that's gonna go well. You know, seriously.
Did you take your hearse?
No, I wouldn't even work. I would just sit in the cemetery by the lake and just like throw stones.
They wanted you to door-to-door sell graves?
Yes. And but the graves sell themselves. I know it's... Oh, anyway, it's so ridiculous. But at that point, to be buried at the lake, you know, there's a nice little lake in there. To be buried at the lake.
Yeah.
Full burial.
Like Chris Cornell, I think,
he's
recently
cremated.
Buried. Well, but he's in that area.
Yeah. But
and
a full
Ramon,
burial at the lake with guarantee that you're going to be waterlogged. I mean, you will be
waterlogged. In the water, right.
It is it's what's going to be.
Yeah.
28K is what it was back
then.
So
28K to basically become part of the lake.
That was back in 2002. That Whoa. Same grave right now, and I'm not even shitting you, I saw the prices, $247,000 for that same grave that in 2002 was going for $28,000.
Well,
I mean, I saw the prices. I'm not making this stuff up.
Hollywood real estate is pretty wild right now, you know, so I guess it makes sense.
If you're going to invest.
So I want to go back to you selling graves. What was, like, the spiel? Like, because you did knock on a door at some point and try to...
Like, twice.
What did you say? Like, what do you say? Like,
I
What's
don't even
the pitch?
Remember. I have the book. I should get that. I should find that book because I still saved it all with your script and, you know, the price tags and everything.
You're there
like
with
that.
The binder. Okay, if they say this, go to
yeah.
page 3.
I got
right?
a certificate that I graduated from their classes, you know. And the guy that was leading the class is saying, well, we have a few people buried here. And I'm like rattling off the list. He's like really offended. It's like, I know this
You're
shit.
You're like, a few?
Yeah, right. So, you know, Elmo Lincoln. Like, they're going to even know who Elmo Lincoln is, but...
You would think, though, that would be a selling point. That's, like, the main selling point.
Now it
to
is.
To be buried in Hollywood Forever.
Yeah.
Hey, you could be in the same cemetery as, you know, 50 famous celebrities.
Yes.
Famous
and,
people.
I mean, now they call areas by celebrities. So there's, by Douglas Fairbanks, it's called the Fairbanks Lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Over by Valentino, where I bought, is the Valentino Shrine.
Right.
And they just paid. Now, I don't know this for a fact. This is what I think happened. Judy Garland was buried interred in New York at a cemetery, at Ferncliff Cemetery. When she died, it was at need. She didn't have any plans. She was only 47 or 49 when she died. Mm. So they put her at the next grave that was available. Okay. And so she was sort of on her own, surrounded by all these other people she didn't know. So about 3 years ago or 2 years ago, Hollywood Forever, I think, paid the expenses. Whoever paid the expenses, I think it's them, had her exhumed from New York and brought her here to Los Angeles. And she's buried at Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
Whoa.
Now, they gave her her own room. It's called the Judy Garland Pavilion. Huh. And they have her center point. It's going to be where Liza is going. It's going to be where Lorna Luft and Joey Luft and their families are going to go in this section. But now you can buy a grave at the Judy Garland Pavilion for a marked up price.
You know what? If the floor of the hallway leading into it is yellow bricks, I'll buy it.
It's not. It's poppies.
I'm not in. No, not. I'm not doing it then. That is crazy.
Yeah, so it's an industry. I mean, the death locations of celebrities and all those people. I know people that bought graves at Ferncliff because they wanted to be there because Judy Garland was there, and now all those people bought those graves. The guy that's probably spent $100,000 on the space next to her
is next to an empty hole now. Yeah,
and it's going to be some person.
It's the ups and downs of the celebrity grave market.
Yeah, maybe they won't sell it because Lucy was at. Was at Forest Lawn Hollywood Hills, and they exhumed her, and her space is still empty.
Doesn't I thought it was you or somebody we know had a spot next near Marilyn Monroe, over at.
It wasn't me.
Who was it?
Well, I mean, it's taught. Well, Hefner's next to her.
Oh, okay. That's what I was thinking.
The guy above her is that Richard Poncher, who had his. They flipped him over after his funeral, so he's facing down, and that's true. That is so true. Wow. No, I know the guy that did it, and it's true. Isn't that gross? Poor Marilyn.
That is terrible.
Yeah. Funny.
Yeah.
Now. That's really gross.
Wow.
Well, anyway, sorry. We just went on a tangent.
That's okay. No, people love our tangents, Scott.
Yeah.
Yep. Especially when it's about stuff like that. And you learn things about Scott that we didn't know, like that he used to sell graves for 2 minutes. All right. So who else before we get to
Jackie
Coogan?
Well, you
got to
go into this. You know more about this guy, Jackie Coogan. Oh, tell man. Me, tell me.
So Jackie Coogan, not that I'm a Jackie Coogan expert by any stretch, but what a freaking biography this guy has.
I mean, the stuff you were telling me the other night, I was like, what?
So grain of salt. Maybe some of this isn't true. I think it all is. So he's famous.
That's all that matters.
I think it's true. Therefore, here it is. No, he's famous for being the kid in the Charlie Chaplin film. That's how he first kind of busted right. out, and he was one of the first big...
I mean, he was not a boxer, the kid. I mean, he was literally a child, like three or four,
yeah,
wasn't
he? Yeah, and he was one of the first child actors to be famous child actors, and he was supposedly one of the first kids to be merchandised. So he, as a child actor, he made a lot of money. I think I saw somewhere in the $2 to $4 million range, which today would be like $50 million.
Are you sure it wouldn't be like today would be $2 to $4 million?
No, they said he made $2 to $4 million because all the merchandising and all that stuff just raked in all. Because he had a big childhood career beyond just a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I don't maybe that is already adjusted. I don't think so though. I think that's what it was back in.
That's outrageous.
Whenever it was. So basically, then what happened was when he was 18, he's in college, and one of his good friends was the heir to a department store. Fortune in San Jose. The kid gets gets kidnapped to be held for ransom. But
Jackie Coogan gets kidnapped?
No, his friend does.
Oh, okay.
The friend that was the heir
kid.
To his fortune.
Don't call him
so, the
kid.
I mean, he's like a little Lindbergh baby, right?
Yeah,
he was
yeah.
a kid. He was known to have this happened a lot. The kids of a wealthy family are always under
no,
threat
when you're
of
saying
being
the
kidnapped.
Kid, I just got the child.
So okay. his friend got kidnapped and held for ransom because his family was rich but what really happened was they killed him like right away. But then still tried to send a ransom note and were found and arrested and put in prison. And a lynch mob showed up, dragged these guys out of the jail in San Jose and hung them, lynched them. And one of the stories, one of the urban legends at least, is that Coogan was there and took part in it, was holding one of the ropes or something like that, was like, was part of the lynch mob, basically.
Wow.
And then I read that like the governor of California basically like was, yeah, that's okay. It's okay that he was lynched, justifiable. And then a couple years later, he's 20. He's coming back from hunting, I think it was doves, down across the border in Mexico. He's with his dad and his best friends and one or two other people. And I think his dad was driving, and he lost control, rolled the vehicle. Everybody in the vehicle died except Jackie.
Whoa,
he lost
that's
his dad,
crazy.
He lost his best friend. Everybody died except for Jackie Coogan. He's the only one who survived. 6 months later, he turns 21, gets to inherit his estate that he's been, all this money he's been earning as a miner. And that's when he finds out that supposedly his mom and his stepdad had spent all his money. His stepdad had been his money manager as a kid. And then when his parents got divorced, his mom married his money manager. And they basically spent all his money on riches, on diamonds and fur coats and cars and all this stuff. All his wealth was gone. And so as a result of that, California passed a thing called the Coogan Act which is there to protect the estates of child actors from that kind of predatory, you know, stuff from their parents or whoever taking all their money and spending it. So that's the guy that became Uncle Fester.
You know, and that makes sense because I read a quote that that Ken Weatherwax was monkeying around on the set a lot on the Addams Family set, and Coogan poked him. He said, "Pay attention, kid. I did a law for this." So,
right. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and there's one more thing. World War II comes around. He not only joins up, but he demands that he be put into combat. So kind of like what Jimmy Stewart actually flew, you know, planes into battle. He wasn't like a behind the lines kind of guy.
Yeah.
So they put him.
At that point, he probably figured, "Fuck it, I ain't gonna die. I already went through all this shit."
So he ends up flying gliders, I think, into India.
Whoa!
I mean, there's crazy, you know, risks. And so what a biography. By the time this guy's like in his mid-20s, he's lived like three lives.
Yeah,
basically,
no kidding.
Right? So that is Uncle Fester.
Oh, and I know he got busted for pot, too, a few times. He was arrested for smoking dope or for having dope a couple of times.
I think if you lived that life, you'd probably want to...
Well, yeah. God. He's
I need to unwind.
He's buried at Holy Cross. And
where's that?
It's in Culver City, right off the 405.
That's another one where a lot of famous people are buried at, and I haven't been to that one yet.
Oh,
I
really?
I really need to go.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, that's where Bela Lugosi is and Sharon Tate. And all these other people. But somebody sent me, God, probably 25 years ago, a picture of Jackie Coogan in his casket. And I posted it on Find a Death. And he's wearing a blue suit. And this is just very, you know, it's a very open caskety picture. Nothing to jump up and down about. But somebody suggested they should have screwed a light bulb in his mouth.
Because of that trick he would do on the show.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he looked dead on the show. So
yeah.
It probably wasn't that shocking.
Oh, you know, that fur collar, that was genuine beaver. It was a beaver collar. No, wait, no, it was gopher. That's what it was. It was a genuine gopher. Yeah.
Wow.
Now when you look at it, you'll be able to tell. Yeah. Gopher.
That's definitely gopher.
It's not beaver.
Mm-mm.
No.
No. Who would have thought that was beaver? Clearly gopher.
Ridiculous.
So speaking of Sharon Tate being buried over at Holy Cross in Culver City, a friend of mine lives or lived over there and near that cemetery and talked about on the, you know, the anniversary of the deaths, the Manson murders, that just like we kind of go up Cielo Drive a lot, people show up at the gravesite during the day and kind of do a service.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm sure for the 50th anniversary that's coming up this summer, there's probably going to be something
big,
I would imagine, over there.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, we're going to be doing like a 3 or 4 day event for the 50th anniversary of the murders. And
which will be this August.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because we've gotten responses from people saying, "Oh, I really want to go, but I don't want to talk about any of that murder stuff." I was like, "All right, well then have your own event because it's ours." I mean, I like Sharon Tate very much, but you know, really, if she'd be alive, she'd be like Tina Louise or something like that. You know, I mean, she didn't really want to be an actor; she wanted to be a mom more than anything else. So I just it makes me crazy that people want to go. You know, just say, "Yeah, we want to do, but we don't want to do it the way you want to do it." And it's like, screw you, then do your own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that if you don't want to focus on that, but go look at pictures on your own.
Yeah.
Piss me off.
So is that the Addams Family? Did we cover it? There's more, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, just sort of a catching up kind of a thing. There was a, you know, I'm talking about Wednesday. Lisa Loring is her name. Lisa Loring, this is a really interesting story.
Still alive, but yes.
Yeah. She was married to a porn star. His name was Jerry Butler. Now, do you know who Jack Nance was?
I know that name.
Okay, he was an Eraserhead.
Okay.
Remember that movie?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he was also in Twin Peaks. And he was a bit of a live wire. Jack Nance died. He was hit in the head by the Winchell's Donuts right off of... Fair Haven, is it in Pasadena? Right off the freeway.
He was hit over the head with a donut?
No, he was hit in the head. He had gotten in a fight, and then he had like an aneurysm when he got back to his apartment. It was like a little bit like...
He'd been hit in the head, he didn't know he was serious.
Yeah, like
Natasha
Richardson, you know, she was in a skiing accident. It was like 2 days later,
brain
she collapsed.
Swells and
Yeah, so that's what happened to Jack. But Jack was married to...
How do you get into a fight in a donut shop?
Well, he was a live wire, and I think that there were these kids in front of him, and there was a fight. And
it escalated,
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so he walked across the street to his place and just, you know, just dropped
dead. It's like when I see kids crying in a Toys R Us or Disneyland. I'm like, how can you be unhappy here? Who wants to find a donut?
Who wants to drag their kids
fight
to
in a donut shop?
Freaking Disneyland. Why do people bring like 6-month-olds to Disney? Like they're going to even know.
Like they're going
to
remember.
Ugh. It makes me crazy. It's like, get away from me.
You
I
know
want
what?
To get on Snow White's
you know
ride.
I just speaking of Disneyland, and we're going to do a Disney as episode 4 preview.
Yeah.
We are going to do Disney, which I can't wait for the next show. But I went to Disneyland again recently, like last year. And I grew up in Anaheim. I could see the Disneyland fireworks from my bedroom window. You know, I lived in Fullerton.
That's cool.
I mean, it was there. It was always like part of my life. And we were a very Disney family. And, I heard they're raising the rates again, the ticket prices again. And I'm kind of like, good. Because when I went last year, you almost couldn't move.
You have to like mortgage a house to go to Disney if you're a family.
It's crazy expensive, but I think that's why though, because there are so many people in that park right now.
Yeah.
They're just crammed in there, and they have to do some barrier of entry, I think, to lower the amount of people that are in there, because it was out of hand. I didn't remember it being that crowded when I was a kid. You know, going in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and also the castle seemed a lot bigger when I was a kid.
Well, yeah, everything is.
Yeah.
If you look at it in comparison to the one that's at in Florida,
yeah.
You know, which is like enormous.
Yeah.
Cinderella's is kind of trite.
Mm-hmm.
After that. You know, it was kind of cool. About a year ago, maybe more, I got to eat in 33, Club 33.
You actually did that. Yeah. I have one other friend that got to do that.
That was really
How
cool.
was it?
It was, I mean, it was a fancy restaurant. There aren't, you know, maybe there's hidden Mickeys in there, but there wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that.
Do they have the microphones over the tables?
I don't know. I didn't see them. So this Jack Nance, okay, he was married to, you know, Jerry Van Dyke from Coach. He was like the coach
yes,
and coach
yeah, yeah, yeah.
or the older guy.
Yeah.
And his daughter was named Kelly, and his daughter was a porn star, okay, married to Jack Nance. So Lisa Loring is married to this other guy, mm-hmm. The Jerry Butler. And
Lisa
friends,
Loring, who was Wednesday Addams.
Yeah. Okay. And it was really sad because Kelly committed suicide. Jack Nance was out on location, just, you know, probably hours from Los Angeles. And she committed suicide while she was on the phone with him. He heard her hanging him. Heard him hanging herself.
Heard her hanging herself.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And Lisa wow. Loring claims that she was the one who found her body hanging there, which I think is pretty wild. I don't know if it's true, but she said it. She said that that it was. So it was just a weird little bit of trivia. I saw Ken and I saw Lisa Loring at one of those autograph shows because I love those autograph shows.
Yeah,
I go all the time.
Yeah.
And I felt sorry for him. You know, they were sitting there together and they were signing their Pugsley and Wednesday autographs. And this woman comes right up to him and she goes, "Do you two do anything?" You know, it was like so shitty. You know?
Why are you there if that's your attitude?
Yeah. And then she's, of course, Lisa Loring is on a lot of soap work. You know, we do a lot of stuff like that. You know, it was just, I felt so bad for them. It's like, just here, celebrate what they did. It was
right.
a cool thing. And do you do anything? It's like, oh, fuck yeah.
So I
don't you just want to kick people?
I don't think I've told this on this story yet because we've only done 2 episodes. But I went to one of those fan autograph signing things over. It was over by LAX.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was one of the hotels there, like the Marriott or one of those. And I remember there were two like dueling autograph signing things going on like across the hallway from each other. One was like fan stuff like that, like sci-fi related things. And the other one was a porn.
Thing.
And I remember we wandered through the porn one, and I remember all these guys are lined up to get their little porn things autographed. I'm like, what are you doing with those? What do you do with
you
like your signed,
but
no, what do you do with like your signed porn star headshot? Like, do you hang that up in your living room? Is this something you show mom when she comes over? Like, I don't want to know what they're doing with it. That's weird.
Will you sign my autograph from the movie Animates?
To each their own. I don't judge. I do. It is weird to me, but
maybe
it's not weird to them. Okay,
I
Scott
judge,
don't judge,
and I will. Constantly.
So, but here's the craziest part about this. I just moved to LA, and I was working on a low budget vampire movie that never got finished, and we needed a scream queen, and. So we went to this convention because the director or the producer of the film, there was a girl he wanted to get who'd been in some stuff. And we talked to her. She's a tall blonde girl. And he gave her a script. She was interested. Great. I'll read it. Okay, we'll follow up in a couple of days, blah, blah, blah. And then we don't hear from her. And it was Lana Clarkson.
Oh, wow.
It was, and Phil Spector killed her.
Yeah.
Like a few days after we... Huh. Had that encounter, and that's why we never heard back from her. And I remember the producer of the show calling me on my cell phone, like a few days after that murder happened, and he was like in line. He's like, I'm in line at the grocery store, and I just looked at the cover of this like tabloid or whatever, and it's her.
Wow.
He's like, because you know, when you're making a movie, real life kind of goes in the background. You just focus all your time on that thing you're making. And we all knew Phil Spector, oh, he killed this woman and everything, but it didn't really hit home until he looked and saw the name and the picture and was like, oh my God, that's Lana Clarkson. That's who we just met with. So I met her like a few days before she died. She was very nice.
Well, you were going to buy her autograph. Of course she's going to be nice.
But she was kind. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and we weren't there to get her autograph. We were there to get her. I guess we were there to hire her. She would have made money off the deal. But yeah. Anyways.
Interesting.
Those fan signing things are no joke.
Yeah, I love those things. I got I got Angie Dickinson to say fuck 3 times. I did. I was like,
and speaking of monster shows, Eddie Munster is
Butch.
He's active. I think he's been active at those.
Oh God,
that's kind of
yeah.
how he makes his money. And I think he married the his fan club president.
Oh, they yeah, right, the they girl. Split up. Though.
Oh, did they?
Oh yeah, it was really bitter.
I really wanted those kids to make it.
No. No, Butch is something. But he's been to so many of those things, they don't even... He just sits there and reads. Nobody buys anything from him.
Because they've already got him, right? Yeah. Everybody that goes to those is
yeah. I mean, he's you know, he's... Imagine doing something almost 60 years ago and still signing autographs.
And these things, there's like a convention hall. Just people are sitting behind folding tables.
Oh, guys, he's met so many cool people.
And posing for photos and autographs and all that stuff.
They have some really cool stuff. But those... Just walking through those aisles and looking at the names, because you can't look at the people. Because you don't even know who they are. I mean, they did something a million years ago. And you're like, oh my God, it's Nanette Fabre or something like that, you know? And it's like somebody who would hardly anyone know anyway. And then you look behind them and it's like this, you know, they've changed.
That's like, you know, we'll definitely, I'm sure, do a show about this person, but that's like Yvette Vickers. That's what she was doing.
Yvette Vickers, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she was the, whatever, the giant woman. What was the...
Attack of the 50-foot woman.
Yeah, so
but
that's...
she wasn't the 50-foot woman in the movie.
Not, yeah.
No, God bless her.
Yeah.
What a way to go. But, oh my God, yeah, just walking down those aisles, I met so many cool people. And you can, you know, they're the people you can ask. They were there. So you can ask, you know, talk to Barbara Parkins about being the best maid of honor at Sharon Tate's wedding and Mark Lindsay from Paul Revere and the Raiders, who knew Manson, you know, he lived in that house on Cielo Drive with Terry Melcher. And he's, yeah, Manson was always around.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just, these are the people.
I was briefly in the martial arts world, entertainment world for some reason. And I had to go to this event at the Hollywood Park Casino, which is, I think, now been torn down. And they were, it was a fight. It was like a kickboxing fight. And for whatever reason, Burt Ward was there. He was the special guest.
Really?
Which was funny because it was not his audience. And I remember they brought him up on stage and he promoted, he has this, him and his wife have this dog food company.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
their thing, right? This health, dog health food company and whatever. And he was there to promote it. And he just, I mean, people were just looking at him like, who is this guy? You know what I mean? Like, you know, and I knew who he was. I was like, oh my God, that's freaking Robin. He was in the boxing ring talking, and then he was done. He came out of the ring and he was just standing kind of by himself. Nobody was walking up to him. I ran over to him and I started talking to him, and I brought up Sharon Tate and the Manson murders and Jay Sebring and all that, and he claimed that
don't tell me he was supposed to be at the party that
night. No,
no,
okay. Thank God he
Please,
did not
no.
say that he was supposed to be there. No, but he did talk about training, because they trained with everybody trained with Bruce Lee.
Oh, yeah.
And all that. And he remembered doing that, and he said that he had some story about Sharon Tate that was related to that, and I can't remember now what it was, but
yeah,
Burt Ward.
I read his book, and he said something about he and Bruce Lee had some sort of competition. Bruce Lee didn't like him very much because, you know, Bruce Lee was Kato on the spinoff show,
right.
The Green Hornet. So he was like, it was like the dueling sidekicks.
This dueling, yep.
And he said that back then, you know, things change when people die and they get older and they mellow. But I understood that he and Bruce Lee butted heads more than one time. Maybe quite literally, I think they may have.
Wow.
But, yeah, because Bruce Lee would do the fights, and he was like, and Bruce and Burt Ward wasn't prepared, you know, to be a stunt fighter.
Yeah, sure.
So I think that a couple of times he got belted, and it was accidentally on purpose.
All right, another tangent.
We got to talk before we finish up, though. We've got to talk about that 1977 movie, Halloween.
You and I were talking about this, the Halloween special for the Addams Family in 1977, shot in color, unfortunately, on like video. And
it's on YouTube. You can look. I saw it today.
It's just they clearly did not have the budget they could not recreate that set the way that, you know, it was such an ornately created set, and they just had a few of the props kind of in there in the room, and it was very, very.
And they shot it in that house on it's on Lucerne. I passed it today. It's the same house that was used in the movie Willard. It was the same one that was used in Witchboard, and it's a cool old. I mean, it's an amazing house, and they actually shot it in the house and on the property. But it was done with that 70s kind of video feel. You know, there was no texture to it. It was like live action.
And it was not artfully shot.
And not even, probably not even a single writer. I think the cast just sat there and like had a drink and then they go, okay, I'm going to do this.
Everybody knew, like, this is a, where are they now?
I'm surprised like the Harlem Globetrotters weren't on it. You know what I mean? Because it was so bad.
I'm sure everybody involved was like, people tuning in are going to be tuning in to see what do they look like now. Let's catch up with how the kids grown up. You know what I mean? Like, it was a nostalgia trip. They're like, don't worry about the plot.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, do you remember, no, you're too young to remember, when they did a rescue from Gilligan's Island, and that was in the 70s, 78, I think it was, and they went back to the island and rescued everyone. They came back to Hawaii.
Because the original show ended with no rescue.
Yeah, it was supposed to go for another season, and they just canceled it. So they did a huge, and that show got astronomical ratings, and it was really well done, and it was like the coolest thing to see the castaways in a ticker tape parade and all that business, and at the end of it, they get deserted on a desert island again.
I think they were
trying to do something. I think they were going to try to kickstart the show again.
Well, and that's what I think maybe they may have been trying to do with the Halloween special, because remember they called it the new Addams Family. It was like Halloween with the new Addams Family.
That's right.
Which, you know, sometimes, as we know from our own experience in the business, sometimes Hollywood will approve a special. Mm-hmm. But it's really what's called a backdoor pilot, which is what, when we did Hollywood Death Trip for E, it was a special, it was done as a one-off, but it was if this is really smash ratings or whatever, then it'll be the start of a series.
Yeah.
So that's why they call it a backdoor pilot, because it's a pilot, but they don't know yet if they're going to do the rest of the series, so they air it like a special. So when they call it the new Addams Family, and like you said, they had the younger kids,
Wednesday Senior and Wednesday Junior. I mean,
it makes me think that maybe what they were thinking of doing, and so then it just didn't take off.
And they didn't even have the rights to the music. If you listen to the music at the beginning, it's like backwards, like do 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 do. It's so. But I imagine if they would have gone to series, they probably would have paid it. But,
well, and by that point, you know, was Weatherwax and Wednesday actresses, were they still actors at that point?
I don't, well, Soap, I think, well, Wednesday was doing, or Lisa Loring was doing acting until the mid-80s, I think, soap stuff.
Okay, so she was, yeah.
But Ken wasn't.
He was out of it,
and that was quite clear if you watch it. Ken Weatherwax was really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had the...
him still kind of dressing up in that same old outfit with the striped shirt.
That scene at the beginning where they're all combing each other's hair, and they're like all the way up the stairs, and every single one of them is like combing the person in front of their hair. Oh my God, it's such a creepy... Yeah, and not in a good way. No, it was bad. Creepy bad. And but it's a curiosity. It's something that should be seen for people that are into this.
Yes.
Yeah. And crazy. And you know who also still alive is Felix Silla, who played Cousin It. He was...
Would you know?
Pardon? How do I know? Because I love little people. And he was Tweaker or Tweaky, the one
but
that
it's not like he gets recognized as being Cousin It.
No, but he did. He does the nostalgia show thing, you know,
right?
Because he was there on set.
Mm-hmm.
He did some of the commentary with John Astin, because John Astin's still alive. Gomez on the.
I grew up with Night Court. That was one of my favorite sitcoms growing up.
Yeah.
And he would play Harry's dad.
Oh, really?
He wasn't in every episode. It was special episodes. He would come in. Harry's dad, you know, Harry being Judge Harry, the main star of the show. His dad was played by Astin, and Astin was in a lunatic asylum. He was crazy.
I thought you were talking about Felix Silva.
John Astin. John Astin played Harry's dad, and those were always like some of the best episodes because his character was so far out. He was crazy, and it was I really liked that guy, and. I didn't realize this. He's Sean Astin's dad?
They say. Well, you know, that's the thing. There's a whole rumor about the 60s thing where... How if you... This is I'm not stating this as a fact, but you know the story?
Hmm.
How Desi Arnaz Jr., who was Lucille Ball's son with Desi, had a thing with Patty Duke. And Lucy did not like Patty Duke at all. And ultimately, she was a hard lady.
Right.
You know what I mean? She was a boss lady.
Yeah,
she was. And good on her. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But her kids really kind of are a bit shell-shocked still from that relationship. With their mother. So anyway, Patty Duke and Desi Arnaz Jr. had a thing. And Lucy was like, no way. And made him cut her off. Well, apparently, they say, supposedly, she was pregnant around that time. If you look at a picture of Desi Jr. and you look at a picture of Sean Astin, it's like, oh,
really?
Okay. Now, he's come out and denied
it. It's like Ronan Farrow and Frank Sinatra. Oh,
that is not even an issue.
Give me a break.
Oh, my God. That is like it's like they took a mold of Sinatra's
face. If you put a fedora on his head, he's Frank Sinatra.
So, I feel sorry for him if that's not true, repeating this, because it's a bothersome thing for them, but it's always been speculation for decades that Desi Arnaz Jr. is actually his father and John Astin adopted him.
Right.
But that's purely, speculation.
So I looked it up, and even Sean Astin believed that Desi Jr. was his father at one point. And apparently he finally got tested, and it turned out it was this third individual who had a brief relationship with his mother. And but I guess he kind of still treats Desi like a father figure and is reportedly close to all three of them. Wow.
Yeah, I do want to just give a shout out to, I sent him once before, Steve Cox, who is a buddy of mine, and he wrote the Addams Chronicles. And these books, they are like the textbooks for these shows. Green Acres, The Beverly Hillbillies, they are like scholarly books
and
about
those
these
are
crazy
on,
shows.
And you can get that on Amazon?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. We'll
and
put a link to it.
It's beautiful books. I mean, got, full color, amazing behind the scenes stuff. And no, it's really, I highly, highly recommend it.
All right. Well, this has been an especially long episode of Dearly Departed Podcast, but that's because we had so many people to cover. And so the more deaths, the longer the show.
I'm going to throw my gopher coat on.
And walk out into the wind.
Waddle off with my light bulb.
All right. Well, that's it.
Adios.
See you guys later. See you next time. We will be talking Disneyland.
Yay.
This has been an episode of the Dearly Departed Podcast. Dig up more episodes at dearlydepartedpod.com and on iTunes and Google Play. See you next time.